Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. 4 minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here with you today. See, I just got off the phone interviewing Kristen Hawkins. She's president of Students for Life America, and she is passionate. And we had a very lively conversation with her. What an amazing thing she's done. She has really tripled the number of campus pro-life groups in the U.S. She has just gone crazy. It's gone from 181 groups to over 1,000. Now the biggest pro-life conference in the nation, and she was valedictorian of her class, which raises this point in my mind as I'm thinking of who was valedictorian in my class. And I can think he is working now in San Francisco. He's married with a couple kids. He has a PhD and two master's degrees. And I think on his business card, it just says, "I'm really, really smart." Which makes me think, what do you know about your class valedictorian? What is that person doing now? I'd be real curious to know. And if you know what that person is doing from your graduating class, your valedictorian, let me know. Write me, bill@myfaithradio.com. Give me a short description of what you know about that person. I'm real curious about the top of the class people. Kristen got had a conversation with somebody that said, "You should launch a national campaign." She said, "Okay, I will." And she did. And obviously the Holy Spirit has been leading and guiding her, but she's also a very ambitious person. And it seems that the people that end up number one in their class have a lot of ambition in life, and there's something to learn. And I'm just curious, so where did all these people end up? My best friend in high school, my junior year, he was a senior, and he was class valedictorian, and he's a very successful surgeon today. And it's a privilege to rise to the top. You're already a leader, an academic leader in your school, and you become valedictorian. Okay, where are they now? I'm curious. So start thinking about that person in your high school class that was valedictorian and think about what they're doing. Let me know because I'm real curious. I just love to see who's out there and what they're doing. Coming up next, I've got Dr. Mike Bechtel on the line, and I'm going to talk to him about he's written a book called "People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys, How to Communicate with Confidence, and You Can't Text a Tough Conversation." So we'll be talking to him in just a minute. Be back. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour of Bill Arnold here. I have Dr. Mike Bechtel on the line, and he is already earning Most Valuable Player of this show because he is he lives on the West Coast, and he's up. It's 8 minutes after five. Mike, you're MVP.
Thank you. I've already had my coffee, so I can form multisyllable words. I think
awesome.
We're okay.
Awesome. Now I tease the audience with a couple of your old books that are still great books, and I want to say go out and get them. People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys, How to Communicate with Confidence, and You Can't Text a Tough Conversation. But what I really want to focus on is the new book, Dealing with the Elephant in the Room. Of course, most people want to avoid that elephant in the room, whether it's a spouse, a friend, a boss, or a coworker, or even your child. Tough conversations create high anxiety and offer lingering resentments. Whew, let's get started. The spouse who withdraws and won't engage. That's problem number one, isn't it?
Well, it's the one we're probably the most familiar with. Is early in relationships, everything, we're still on the honeymoon. The other person is perfect. They can't do any wrong. And then we start smelling the elephant. We start seeing those little things that come in that nobody wants to talk about. And we don't want to mess up those relationships. And so the first time something doesn't quite go right and we see that disconnection, and we think, gosh, that's not what I signed up for, but it must be just a passing phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts lasting a little longer, and nobody wants to talk about it because I don't want them to get upset. We don't want conflict in the relationship because, after all, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden we've got something that's growing, and everybody knows about it, but nobody talks about it.
So we're trying to keep peace. We're trying to maintain some kind of harmony. Days are full and busy, and we have a small window of pleasant time in the evening, maybe. And I don't want to wreck that with a difficult conversation. Seems reasonable to me.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we don't just have the evenings. The days are busy, and these kind of things, the bigger they are, probably the more they need to be addressed, not in the heat of the emotion when something's happening, but to say, can we talk about this tomorrow night, or can we talk about this on the weekend? There's something that I've just been playing with, and there's something that I would love to talk to you about. Can we just sit down and spend a little bit of time on this, maybe after dinner, maybe tomorrow morning? I think picking the timing is really good.
I want to talk about it now.
And if we do want to talk about it now, it's like, you know what, let's go ahead and talk. And we can do it, but if it gets to the point where the emotion is involved and it gets a little bit crazy, then it's like, you know what, I think for my sake, I need a break, or especially if I'm more of an introvert, I need a chance to think.
Okay.
I want to respond well to what you're saying, but I need to process that because I don't want to say something that would be hurtful or that's really not well thought out. I need a little bit of time to just think through that, but I will come back. I'm not just shutting down and disappearing. I do want to think about it. I want to respect you and give you my thoughts on that.
So, Mike, I'm thinking rule number one might be conflict's not going to be the problem. Maybe the way in which you bring it up might be the problem.
Well, I think that's true in most relationships, is that there are things that are true, and we're told to speak the truth in love.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we speak the truth with someone we love, and we don't look specifically at how we're communicating, but that's so much a part of it, is how we communicate, the timing, the attitude, the emotion that goes with it, is to realize this is the person we care about. And it doesn't have to just be a spouse. It can be anybody we're in a relationship with. But to treat them with the same kind of respect that we would want from them, the golden rule, and to recognize that that's just really the biggest part of it, is this is a relationship. This conversation is one part of it. And we want to make sure that our conversation, our words, build the other person and build our relationship instead of tear it down.
Mm-hmm. Let's, Mike, talk about the teenager who wants to turn every conversation into a battle.
Well, I think it was Ken Poore, the speaker, that used to say that teenagers, he called it the pre-people stage. They weren't quite human yet, but you know, they're kind of working on it.
Uh-huh.
And I think we've all experienced that. It's like, what happened and where did you take my child and where have they come from? But when they come in with all of the different conversational styles, they're experimenting. They're still learning. And they want to be adults. They're growing into it. They have the drive to be independent, which is so healthy. It's the way it's supposed to be. But it's so easy to want to clamp down more as they get older, but to realize that they are growing up. They're moving into some new areas. And these conversations, the way we respond is going to teach them how to respond in tough conversations. I remember when my daughter was little, when she was a toddler, we used to tell her, we used to discipline her, and then we would tell her how to do certain things and how she needed to respond. And then we'd go in and I'd watch her discipline her dolls, and she didn't do it the way I said. She did it the way that I did it.
Mm.
She picked it up from watching me.
Interesting.
So I think with teenagers, it's so critical that we model the kind of communication that needs to happen, especially because kids, I mean, when there's an elephant in the room, everybody's dancing around it. It's huge. It's big. It smells bad.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still sipping tea and talking around its legs and making that happen. But kids are so honest. They come in and say, wow, it stinks in here. There's an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And so with teenagers, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, okay, it's real. Let's talk about it and do it with respect and love and just the genuineness of a relationship.
Yeah. Mike, we're going to take a break in about a minute here, but I want to ask, when conversations, they start to get toxic, and we didn't intend for that, we didn't want that, and now they are toxic, what can we do?
I think it goes back to some real simple things about respecting conversations. Instead of shifting to blame and saying the other person's at fault, to look at ourselves and say, okay, what can I own in this? What's my part? I can't force you to change. I'm not responsible for how you respond. I'm responsible for how I respond.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part is to replace our expectations with expectancy. I don't know what's going to happen. It's kind of like dancing with someone. You don't know how they're going to what step they're going to take, and I can't control it. But I can take my own steps, and I can respond to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really looking at these conversations, staying on our own side of the tennis court, as it were. So they do their serving, we do our serving and responding, and I take responsibility for my side of it.
Mm-hmm. Mike, after the break, I want to ask you, what goes into the cake batter that makes healthier conversations? So we'll take a break. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Dr. Mike Bechtel on the studio line. Be back in a minute. Good morning. It's almost 20 minutes after the hour. During the break, Rebecca and I have been scheming about how we're going to get Mike back on the show and do it soon. I'm talking to Dr. Mike Bechtel. He's written a book called How to Deal with the Elephant in the Room. And Mike, right before we went to break, my question was, what goes into the cake batter to make for healthier conversations? Because when things go bad, what do we do? How do we set up a conversation that, and what do we put into it to make the conversation better, healthier?
You know, I think it goes back to what you said at the very beginning, that we just have so much going on, and it's really tough to have uninterrupted quality time with people when the demands of life just suck us dry. We've got long work hours, our houses need maintenance, and we've got obligations to keep us moving, and it's kind of like trying to relax during a hurricane. And if we want to build those kind of connections, we have to determine what really adds value and which things are distractions from what matters most. I think my favorite quote is, things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least. And I've often thought, you know, that would make a great screensaver. It needs to be on our walls. I think it would make just a dandy tattoo, because it's the kind of thing to carry with us to realize that the things that go into relationships mean we can't be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships take time. It doesn't happen in a microwave. It happens in a crock pot.
Mm-hmm.
And we make those little investments. It's not like putting a coin in a vending machine and the gumball drops out. Then it's done and it disappears. It's more like investing in a portfolio. Those little investments over time give huge results to be able to do that. So I think time, being intentional about that, and making those specific deposits in the other person, and having the patience to grow. Because someone said when patience runs out in a relationship, people run out of relationships.
Mm.
And I think recognize we're just all in process. We can't rush the quality of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mike, what about when it comes to the sexes, when there's a discussion or an argument, do we look at them and approach them differently? Do men have more of a, I want to understand what the situation is and possibly win? Or do women feel the same way? Or do women want to have processing conversations to be heard and understood? Just what are the dynamics of that?
You know, it's real, because sometimes we say there's equality. And there is, but it's not equal, because God did, he created our minds differently. In fact, the last book that I wrote was called I Wish He Had Come With Instructions,
A Woman's
Guide to a Man's Brain. And one of the things that I saw in the research was that there's something called gray matter that we've all heard about, and it talks about how smart we are is the way we usually use it.
Mm-hmm.
And men have about six times more of that gray matter that helps us focus. But then there's something called white matter that women have 10 times more of, and it's that connective tissue that connects everything to everything. So you put them together, we converse differently, that I'm focused as a man on what I'm thinking about at the moment. My wife is connecting it to everything else. So she and I can go out to lunch with different people, and she'll come home, and I come home and she says, well, how was your lunch? And I say, well, it was great. Well, what did we talk about? And I say, stuff. And then she comes home and she's had lunch. I say, what'd you talk about? And sometimes I think her response takes longer than the lunch did, because she gives me sentence by sentence what happens. And it's great. But it's not that one is wrong and the other. We can't try to change each other. It's really more a matter of recognizing those God-given differences, that we do handle it differently, and to be able to have those real conversations. There's times when my wife and I will just say, you know, I really think you're crazy, but I love you to pieces, and let's go with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's futile to try and change the other person.
Yeah, I'll give you a little free coaching here, Mike. This is
yeah.
Compliments.
Yes,
when she said, "How was your lunch? What'd you talk about?" You shouldn't have said stuff. You should have said stuff and junk.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Yeah, that would have been more specific. Yeah.
That was worth getting up early for.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about the best approach in communicating in relationships, and which relationships are tougher than others.
You know, I think the closer a relationship is, the tougher it is. That I can have a tough relationship with my boss, and it does impact things, or a crazy coworker in the next cubicle that hums or whistles all day. But when it gets closer to me with family, that's when it gets, because I have to live with family.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer it is, that's why usually we talk about these marriage relationships with a spouse, because those are the ones that they're really the most important. It's where our highest investment is. And when I'm talking to old high school people on Facebook, that's a different kind of relationship. It's not as critical as the ones that are closest to me. And so the longer I'm with someone, the more those kind of things come out. The best approach to that, to communicating with those, is I think to see them as someone that we value, to not see them as the enemy, to make it safe, be able to draw them out and just control how we respond to them, clarify our expectations, accept their faults, just the things that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest part of the whole thing is to learn how to listen, because people are starved to be listened to.
Mm, I agree.
And it's I would call it power listening, because looking somebody in the eye, I mean, you've had those conversations, I think we all have, where you spend the whole time asking questions and talking about the other person, and then they go away and tell someone else what a great conversationalist you were.
Right.
Or you didn't say anything.
Right.
All you did was just come alongside and just be there. And the more we listen, I think people don't listen, so we feel like if we're going to be heard, we have to talk more.
Yeah.
So in a world where more people are talking, it can get a little crazy.
Yeah,
so I think that listening is big. Go ahead.
We just have a minute left, but I'm just curious, is there a suggestion you could give our listeners that we could implement as early as today? You know, sometimes when people forgive you for something, then they bring it up months later. You're going, ooh, I guess I was forgiven, but you're not letting that one go. Is there any suggestion you can make?
Yeah, I think the quickest walk away ties into that idea of listening, for one. When someone says something, ask someone one simple question. Just say, tell me more, instead of responding right away. If we can learn to add that phrase to our conversations, it can change the dynamics, because it says, I care about you enough to not just try and give a rebuttal to what you just said, but I want to hear more of what you're thinking and where it's coming from. So if I can use that phrase,
yes,
add that in a conversation, it can really change some things.
Now that is worth getting tattooed.
There you go.
Mike, thank you so much for getting up. I appreciate it. You were MVP player of the day. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You bet. Dr. Mike Bechtel and his book, It Is Time to Deal with the Elephant in the Room. It's one you're going to want to pick up. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute. It's 30 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. Ron Deal is going to be my next guest. He's coming up. And, of course, he's from Family Life Blended. With Father's Day coming up, it's important to have a father in a child's life as far as development and security and all that. But there's a lot of grandparents now who are stepping up, and they are helping raise their grandkids, just more than participating in their life. They're raising them. It's becoming a growing trend. So if you have questions about this, and if you're a grandparent or you have a child that's being in part raised by a grandparent and have questions for Ron, you're going to want to give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. We're going to take a short break for news, and then Ron Deal from Family Life Blended will be my guest. Be back in a minute. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Ray Hollenbach, an author and pastor, says it can be difficult to extend grace to other people, but he encourages us to release those people to God. Let's just give them to God and trust that through his grace, he is working on them.
The challenge of grace is that from the outside, it always seems like people are getting off scot-free. But from the inside, it is the source and the fountainhead of how God deals with us. And it's the grace of God to gently bring us around to the things that he wants to address in us. But when we look at grace from the outside, we say, Father, why aren't you addressing this or that or the other thing in that guy? But God knows what he's doing with each one of his children. And you see, grace is much more than just a free gift. It's the example of heaven in our lives. And so we have to trust, you do and I do, that God is the Father of each one of his born-again children. And that as a result, he knows exactly how to nurture and to bring them up. Our job is to actually be stewards of grace. And his job is to do the confrontation and the growing.
If you want to hear that full interview with Pastor Ray Hollenbach, you can do that at our website, which is myfaithradio.com. Search for Deeper Grace, and you will get there. Next up, Ron Deal. We're going to talk about Father's Day and also how grandparents are getting more involved in raising their grandkids. And if you have a question or need some advice from Ron Deal, we'll take your call, 1-877-933-2484. Be back in just a minute.
A step-parent's job is never easy, and unfortunately, it only gets harder when your stepchild hits adolescence. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. No matter how much loving care you give, all too often step-parents experience rejection and anger from their stepchild. A step-parent becomes the target of the teen's regret. She might even believe incorrectly that her life would be much happier and problem-free if you'd never come along. So if tensions are high right now between you and your step-teen, take heart. Though you can't force her to stop thinking the way she does, her feelings of loss won't go on forever. And one day, she'll understand the other side and see you as her solution, not her problem.
Mark Gregston has prepared a brand new resource to help parents draw their teens closer, not push them away. Download your free copy online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
It's almost 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us today. We're excited to have Ron Deal with us again. I've already handed out my MVP of the day, so sorry about that, Ron, but you are definitely on my all-star team. Welcome to the program.
All-star team. Well, wow, I'm honored.
I appreciate
that.
Yeah, you have many, many home runs on the show. I did have to hand out the MVP of the day to Mike Bechtel, who was live from the West Coast. So it was 5 in the morning
good for him.
Yeah, what the
heck?
Yeah,
it was very early.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about Father's Day coming up. And let's just start at the ground level, which is the importance of a father in a child's life.
Mm. Well, gosh, so much could be said about that because we all know how important fathers are. Let me back up and say it this way. People who don't have their father in their life or have a poor relationship with their father know how important fathers are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that gap is really, really significant in their hearts and their lives. For young men, it's about them having a model, a role model of what it is to be a man, of character, to understand what meekness is, that is, you know, strength under control, and to see that lived out day in and day out, to watch. I think for all children, boys and girls, to watch how a man treats their mother or other women in the man's life gives them the sense of what it is to be a leader, but yet somebody who is a servant, who is kind and considerate of other people. You know, those role models, images just go deep in a child's heart and stay with us. And whether it's a mom or a dad, when somebody's missing, it just leaves a hole in our hearts. And that's difficult. You know, it really is. You know, this is an odd theological thought, but let me just pose it just to make a point. I've often wondered why God is father and not so much mother. By the way, it's true in the Old Testament. The imagery, the Psalms do talk about God being like a mother.
Mm-hmm.
There's some qualities of God that are mom-like, if I could say it that way. I mean, after all, moms are created in the image of God too. So there's something there that is a carryover of who God is. But the predominant, obviously, term in Scripture used to describe who God is God as Father. And I don't even know that I can articulate well this, what that means, you know, in theological terms. But I think in practical terms, what that represents is there's an image that God has chosen to use to identify himself to us, something that he intended us as children to have here on earth, to have a little father, if you will, so that we can eventually move towards the big father. And I think that right there captures for me. I mean, I'm a dad, and I've thought about this so many times in my life, how important my role is. I let me say it this way. I create God in my image to my children.
Mm.
And, you know, Bill, if anybody who's a dad right now goes, should be very intimidated by that thought.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that ought to scare the bejeebers out of us,
right?
Right. I create God in my image to my children.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm angry and harsh, Martin Luther said, my dad was hard, unyielding, and relentless, and I cannot help but think of God that way. That Martin Luther said that. It leaves an impression. We create those first impressions. We create impressions. And if it's a positive impression, as God intended, then our children easily move from the relationship they have with us to the relationship they have with him.
Mm-hmm.
If we leave hard, unyielding, and relentless, exasperating. What does Ephesians 6 say? Don't exasperate your children, fathers. Why? Because you then make it harder for them to move towards the heavenly father. There's no doubt that the role of fathers spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, relationally in children is very profound.
Yeah. Well, Ron, the reason I asked that intentionally dumb question, are, you know, fathers important? I intentionally asked that because the culture would say, no, not important at all. As a matter of fact, kind of in the way, and how we've gone from, you know, father knows best to father knows nothing.
I hate that. It seems like we're competing with media images. You know, dads are usually the incompetent one on TV shows and in movies. And, you know, I kind of think that's our society trying to level out power and authority. And, you know, especially in America, we always root for the underdog. And so the underdog should always defeat the upper dog. I'm not sure how to say that, the big dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so because there certainly have been abuses by men in the past of their power in terms of relationships with women, in relationships with children and in the home, you know, we level that out by showing women and children as being as powerful, as competent, as capable, at more smarter, intelligent, et cetera, than the men are. And that's unfortunate because we've gone to the point where, you know, you have to struggle to find a positive image in the media of what a man is. So again, it just behooves me as a dad, I've got to stand in that gap. I've got to be that one. And here's the good news for fathers. You can overcome all that media societal messaging about dads by just being a decent, loving father. That mm-hmm. is going to have far more power and influence in the lives of your children than anything they see in a movie.
Mm-hmm. Ron, I want to ask you about the growing role of grandparents raising their grandkids. It seems to be more of a trend, and I'm curious as to what some of the specific challenges are in that situation. We're going to take a break in about a minute, but I do want to get this one started.
Yeah, so 2.5 million grandparents in the U.S. are raising 4.5 million kids. And the first place we need to start with all of that is what's the backstory? Because that's not typical, right? So something has happened that has created a situation where the grandparent is in charge. Now, it could be a whole variety of things. The parents could have died. The children could be orphaned, if you will, and the grandparents are stepping in. It could be drug-related behavior. It could be a divorce story. It could be a combination of a number of different things. Stories of grandparents who just wake up one day and there's a knock at the door and here's their daughter or daughter-in-law or son or son-in-law just dropping off the kids for what seems like a couple of hours, and then they never come back, and they just kind of disappear off, you know, face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lots of different situations. Obviously, for the child and for the grandparent, all of that transition is pretty traumatic. And so the initial transition, wow, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, something's going on, there's questions, there's ambiguity, there's, you know, they have to grieve together, if you will, in the foxhole together, whatever has transpired that has brought about this new circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And that loss narrative is just going to hang with them as they move forward over time.
Yeah. Okay, Ron, I want to continue this conversation, but we need to do it after the break. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a minute more with Ron Deal from Blended Family Life Blended. There we go. Got it out. It is almost 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I am talking to Ron Deal from Family Life Blended, and we're talking today about grandparents raising their grandkids. It's kind of a growing trend, and there are challenges in this situation, and grandparents usually have got nothing but love that they want to give to their grandkids. And there's also challenges when you're dealing with son-in-laws and daughters-in-law. Isn't that correct, Ron?
Yes, it is. Hey, Bill, I gotta just back up a second because I'm not sure you caught it, but in the break there, Faith Radio aired my one-minute radio feature called Family Life Blended, and the subject was about step-parents and how their role changes over time. That is
okay.
Amazing that the Holy Spirit worked that out, because that's exactly one of the things I wanted us to talk about when it comes to grandparents. The same sort of thing can happen with grandparents. Before the break, we were talking about how there's some sort of transition that takes place at some point when the grandparents begin to provide ongoing regular care. And at that moment in time, you know, how do they have authority in the life of a child? It all depends upon the level of relationship they have. With a step parent, often you're walking in and it's from the start, and so you kind of start like a babysitter. Grandparents probably don't start there,
no.
Especially if they've had an ongoing relationship with the child. But it's possible that a grandparent really didn't have much time or contact with a child, and all of a sudden, boom, they're, you know, dropped in their living room, and now we've got to figure this out, you and I together. So grandparents typically have a running start that step-parents don't have, but still, you were the fun person, you know, before the transition. You were the person who provided care for a couple of hours or overnight, and you wound them up and sent them home. You know, that's what grandparenting's all about, right? Wind them up, send them home. But now home is your house, and you've got to provide the structure. And now you've got to provide rules and boundaries and consequences in ways that you didn't before the transition. So the point is, you have to grow into this thing with the kids and figure it out. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be easy. And then you have that ongoing question about son or daughter, the biological parents that are involved in the life of the child. As you brought that up, you know, the questions are they still involved on a regular basis? Are they hit and miss? Are they completely removed? And each one of those obviously has a certain residue to it on a child's heart. And so you have to minister to the grief going on in this grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
They're missing their dad, their mom. At the same time, you're trying to function as dad or mom, if you will, in terms of provision and structure and boundaries. And so it's just an ambiguous transition that isn't easy for grandparent or grandchild. But here's the good news. Eventually things level out, you know, just like with step parenting. Eventually, with time, you get there. Part of it is just staying with the process and doing the best you can and trusting that in time you'll all figure this out together. Everybody's going to make some mistakes on the front end, but eventually things get a little better.
Yeah, during the break, Ron, the Holy Spirit worked it out that I could consume a half pint of coffee. So that I actually missed that little minute that you had. So I appreciate the connecting those dots for us. I have a question about
what happens after kids are grown up? Can fathers change a bad situation?
Oh, yeah. I think no matter what role you are, if we're talking about grandparent or we're talking about a biological dad thinking about Father's Day and maybe you've been disconnected for whatever reason and then now you're back in a child's life. I gotta tell you, as long as a child lives, there is something in them that wants to reconcile with their father.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can get, you know, if you really burn your bridges, I mean, kids can get, their walls can go up and they can get, you know, very disconnected and standoffish. So it doesn't mean that it's an easy fix at all, but there is something in that child that desperately wants that person in their life. And I would say to any dad who has been disconnected, man, start that journey, you know, because
how do you
may
do
feel
that,
like you were unnecessary. Well, how do you do that?
I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it sounds like such a huge job.
Absolutely. First of all, I would assume it starts with an apology.
Wow.
It starts with a genuine repentance. You know, I've been gone, you know, whatever the disconnect has been, whatever the story is, you take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
And start with a kind of a twofold message. One would be, I was wrong. Here's where I messed up. Here's how I hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's really important to say. Here's the impact this has had on your life that I can see so far. And I'm sure there's more that I need to learn, but I see it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's part of taking responsibility. It shows genuineness. And then you say, and I'm here and I want to connect and I'm going to give you as much time as you needed. But I just want you to know that I desire to connect in a relationship with you more than we've had. And that message may fall on deaf ears at first. It may feel like there's no openness whatsoever in the child, but that's where you just stay. You stay close enough that if they ever open that door, you're there. And, you know, trust that maybe with time and grace, you can get there.
Ron, just a minute left, but what about when defensiveness comes up with an apology and the person says, it's about time. And all of a sudden you go, ooh, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah, the encouragement I would give to a dad in that situation is to say, of course it doesn't feel good.
Mm.
Of course you're angry. You have every right to be. I deserve that. That's just a part of taking responsibility for who you've been and what the impact, what you've done to the child. So own it. Don't run away from that. Own it.
Mm-hmm.
And stand there and take it, because that's a part of apology.
Yeah, Ron, I'd like to provide a new service to our listeners where you actually do the apologizing on behalf of the person who needs it done. Because you're so good at this. Can I just hear me, Ron? You're so good at this. This is why you're on the All-Star team.
Well, I appreciate it, Bill. Been working with families and marriage and family for 25 years, and I've learned a few things. And I got to tell you, most of what I've learned has come from people who have repented before the Lord, and this is what he's taught them, and their example has helped me as well.
And remind our listeners what website we go to get more information about Family Life Blended.
Yeah, go to familylife.com. We're part of the larger ministry that is Family Life and Family Life Today radio broadcast and ministry around the world in over 110 countries, familylife.com.
Wow, you didn't have to brag.
Well, most of that's not me.
All
Family
right.
Life's a big organization. It's good to be with them, though.
Thanks so much, Ron. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. God
All
bless.
Right. You bet. It is a couple minutes until the top of the hour. We're going to take a little break and then come back and wrap up the big show. Couple minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for listening today. Just absolutely love that you tuned in this morning. I'm going to leave you with where I started, and this is a passage out of Ephesians in chapter 3. It says in verse 16, I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. So there you go. I pray that his glorious riches may be strengthening you with power through his Holy Spirit in your inner being. Go out and be strong today. Trust in him. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.